everybody, and welcome back to Don't Quit Your Day Job. My name is Paul. I am your host, as is the always. Today, from the terrible state of Ohio, but the pretty decent city of Cleveland, I think, I have Doug and Matt from the band Jackknife Power Bombs. Doug and Matt, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Would you agree that Ohio is a terrible state, or will you defend Ohio?
I think we'll defend Ohio to a certain point. We a certain level. I mean, there's snow outside today. It's November 1st. It's winter's already started. It's
right. Positive.
I feel like we'll defend our region, but as for the rest of the state, you know, like Cincinnati, not so much.
Columbus? Will you defend Columbus?
Yeah, well, because Columbus is actually like a pretty great city. Yeah, okay. It's smaller, but it's really nice. It's got a lot of great stuff around there. And like just the whole downtown area is actually pretty clean and pretty nice too. But yeah, if you go outside of some of the major cities, it's the same as Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, right. Iowa, you know, it's just
Pennsylvania, same. Yeah.
It's basically from here to the Grand Canyon or not the Grand Canyon, sorry. The Rocky Mountains. It's the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. So are you guys in Cleveland or in the surrounding area?
The surrounding area for me, I used to be in Cleveland, within the city of Cleveland for a long time. A lot of the time that the band was playing all the time, I was in Cleveland, but then I moved a little further away.
Okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Matt, and tell us what you do.
Sure. I'm Matt. I'm the singer in the band. I've been in the band. Doug and I were talking about it. So like our, you know, we had a couple lineups of the band for a couple years, but the lineup that's been together, it'll be 20 years in December of this year. Then we first played our show is the five of us. And that's kind of like, you know, momentous that it's been that long.
Cool. And Doug, who are you?
I am Doug. I play the drums in Jackknife Power Bombs. And I don't know if it's technically Cleveland. Sometimes when I enter my address into, you know, to have things delivered or whatever, it'll pop up as Cleveland. But I'm about like 10 minutes south of the city itself.
Okay. So you're for better or for worse, you're a Cleveland band, and you would describe yourselves as a Cleveland band. When I look at some of your material in your press, Cleveland band does Cleveland include like Akron and Canton and stuff like that, or is that its own thing?
I would say like Cleveland, Akron, Youngstown are outside of the Cleveland scene, but they're so close that bands like we've gone to Akron, we've gone to Youngstown, we've gone to Canton, Columbus. It's so close. It's a nice area that you can go get out and around. Right. You can go a little bit further west to Toledo too with no problem. So I think they're separate scenes with separate bands, but there's a ton of crossover. So those bands are coming here and we're going there. It's nice.
Right. And are you guys part of the punk rock scene? So like in Pittsburgh, there's a very vibrant, very cohesive punk rock scene. You know, most of the bands get together. Everybody's really supportive of each other. I think the main problem with the Pittsburgh scene is that there's too many shows, right? There's a show all the time. Everybody cannibalizes everybody else's audience. And that's one of the downsides. But the flip is that, you know, the scene is vibrant and healthy and everybody gets along. Can you say the same thing about your scene?
I think there's lots of different aspects of the scene, and then sometimes those different pieces of the scene don't cross over as much. You know, I think it's maybe more, a little bit more compartmentalized than maybe what you have going on.
Right. So how active are you? One more thing about the scene. How active are you guys on the scene? Are you trying to sort of prop up the whole thing, or are you just, hey, we're a band and we're trying to do our thing and we're part of it and we're going to do shows?
I think we're probably more just we're a part of it. We're trying to do shows. We will organize shows from time to time, but we're really not organizing anything beyond the shows. There's just times where, you know, bands will come in from out of town and we'll try to help them get shows here. Right. They try to help people coming through.
Right. So what is the objective with Jackknife Power Bombs? Again, been a band since the early 2000s. Is the goal now to live out your 80s Sunset Strip rock star dreams and, you know, buy cars and hookers and all of that stuff?
I don't think that was ever ever anybody's dream. And I think, you know, the older you get to, the right. more that is such a pipe dream, and not even, you know, it's like that's more of a product of its time. You know, I don't think there's ever mm-hmm. going to be another 80s Sunset Strip, you know, Motley Crue, all that sort of stuff. Just because music industry in itself is so vastly different than it used to be back then. Mm-hmm. But it's basically just an excuse to get together and make music with your friends and have a great time doing it. You know, if any sort of success comes along with it, then that's just kind of like a cherry on top. But I think you always have to be happy with your, you know, the process and like what you've put into it, and not expecting, you know, to, I mean, we've played with a bunch of bands. I've know a bunch of, like, you know, seen people that all, you know, that they haven't made it anywhere, but they all walk around like they have, like, you know, 10 platinum records. And I personally can't stand that sort of thing. So I'll never, you know, be the guy to show to grandstand anybody or not talk to them because they're in a different band, or, oh, you don't have these patches on your jacket, so I can't be seen talking to you at this show. Like, that is something that I absolutely cannot stand. And I, you know, so I've never wanted to be that kind of a person to right. try and, you know, act like a rock star when I'm just in a local band playing music, trying to have fun, you know?
Right. So how do you measure success at this point? Is the idea of success, as you said, just getting together with your friends and creating something? So the expression part of it versus the business part of it? Is it playing shows? You know, I talk to bands or I talk to musicians. Some love the process of creation, right? Being in the studio. Some love the idea of getting up in front of people and playing shows, even if it's for five people. So how do you guys measure success at this point?
I think it's actually following through and finishing what you start. You know, like the fact that we made this album and are, you know, finally, like, followed through and are still creating and are still together after, you know, 20 plus years is, like, that to me is success in itself. You know, like, how does, just like anyone's success in life, like, how do you measure it? Do you measure it by mm-hmm. the cars and the house? Like, oh, well, that person must be successful then. Or right. are you just, you know, you don't have to have the, you know, the bank account to go along with it to consider yourself successful. You know, like, we've done what we've accomplished, and that right there to me is success. You know, if there's any sort of monetary compensation or, you know, fame or anything that comes along with it, again, that's just kind of like a cherry on top. But I don't think anybody measures, you know, musical or life success by, you know, by that sort of standard.
Right. Well, I mean, I definitely think there are bands, especially younger bands, as you mentioned, that still harbor dreams of the, you know, this is going to be it. And, you know, if push came to shove, every time I put out something new or create something, I'm always joking about, all right, I just need to get this in front of someone and this is going to be my ticket to superstardom, right? So the idea is always there, and I certainly wouldn't say no to that idea. But as you get older, as you said, right, those aren't real things, right? There are other things that are more important.
Yeah. When you're a teenager or early 20s, and, like, yeah, you want to get signed and tour and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, but now it's, you know, we have completely different lives. We have families, we have right. priorities, we have things at home. So it's like, it would need to be something extremely substantial for us to basically right. put our normal lives on hold to, you know, make it worth everyone's while.
Right.
I think I just get so excited from the standpoint of, like, hearing our songs and hearing the songs come together and the process of that, like mm-hmm. to hear, like, way think the songs, how it started at the beginning and then how it was shaped. I think a lot of times what we've done is been able to write a song and not say, like, it's done, and let it grow. And that's, like, just to see that happen, to hear that happen it's really exciting.
So let's talk about the process then a little bit. Is someone bringing a riff and a lyric idea? Is someone bringing a full skeleton of a song and then you guys, you know, work through it? Is someone saying, no, this is my finished song and you fucking guys have to play everything that I say, you know, where on that spectrum are you guys?
Doug, I would say it's more like it's pretty close. It's fleshed out pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think the big thing for us is kind of like there's two steps. Is one is it comes in and it's put together, and then we work on it together to get it to a point where we play it out. And then once we play it out and play it, it just changes. So it's almost like we get it to a certain point that it's almost like a pair of shoes that you get and hey, you can wear them around, but once they're broken in is when they're really comfortable. And that's right. When the songs are really exciting. Like I can't tell you how many times it's like, oh wait, it always ends up happening. Like you record it and after you record it, you're like, we know what we should do is we should pause right here. You know what we should do? We should have this part going to this other part. It's
Yeah.
I think I think that's exactly the thing is like, cause on the new album, I think I wrote like 5 songs off of it. And so I'd bring it in as like, you know, I would have like a whole thing and it's like, okay, well here's the whole part, but everybody always does their own thing. They put their own twist right. on it. You know, it's just kind of like you said, like a skeleton of a song. Everybody comes in, puts their twist on it. And then I'll even change my own drum parts that I had in my head originally while writing the song based on what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then if we need to like, you know, stretch and squeeze parts because of Matt's vocals, it's just kind of, it's an organic process.
Right. Right. Cool. And thinking about what you guys sound like. So immediately what came into my head were so in Northern Germany, there's a sort of a style of music called Schweinerock. So that's literally translates to pig rock. Right. So, and it's this idea, it's like hard rock, but it's got some glam elements and it's got some punk elements and it generally grooves. Right. So it's not like straight up punk and it's not straight up hardcore. But bands from that scene, in particular, bands like Lucifer and Helicopters and things like that, bands that I really like, when I listened to you guys, this was the first thing that came into my head. So are you a crossover band? How do you guys think about your sound?
I mean, I'm a big Helicopters guy, and I think, cool. But I'm often confused about what we sound like. Cause then we have mm-hmm. other songs that are just like more rippers and, mm-hmm. and less like groovish. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to it. I mean, as weird as it is, we always kind of go back to like suicidal tendencies, like okay. not early suicidal, not Possessed to Skate, but like some of the other stuff.
Yeah. Like Lights, Camera, Revolution. Suicidal,
that sort yep. of thing.
Yeah. That's yeah. Cause especially like with, you know, Jim, with all of his solos and his technical guitar playing, like having that over just like fast rock and roll riffs, you know, it's not skate punk or anything like that. I don't think it's really punk in any sort of real sense of the word, except for maybe, you know, screaming vocals and a fast tempo. But yeah, it would say more towards like the suicidal tendencies aspect of it, where it's like a fusion of like a little bit of metal in there. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, like fast AC/DC, you know, a little bit of like Motorhead kind of a tinge.
When you're great on Agnes asks what kind of music it is, what do you say?
I'm going to say pig rock now.
Perfect. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. There is a band from the late 80s from the Boston area called Straw Dogs. And Straw Dogs were sort of a crossover band. It was like fast punk rocky riffs, but with like metal lead playing yeah. and it wasn't like of the time, you know, you think about the high pitch vocals and it wasn't any of that. Right. So it was sort of more hardcore vocals. So again, when I first heard you guys, I immediately thought of Straw Dogs, who a band that never made it big, but I happen to have the vinyl and I really like them a lot. And so that's a sort of band where you think they're doing something different. It's not just this thing. Right. So when you guys are writing songs or when you're creating, do you ever talk about it needs to be more punk or it needs to be more Taylor Swift here or it needs to be more whatever?
Yeah, never, because everybody's own styles individually as musicians dictate, you know, like they're playing. You know, I would say Mark has more of like a punk kind of style to his playing. And then, you know, the other guitarist, Jim, you know, has more of like a cleaner, technical, you know, melodic metal type style. Mm-hmm. And then my playing is, you know, I have a bunch of different influences. You know, growing up, I would listen to like Buddy Rich and like Neil Peart, things, you know, drummers like mm-hmm. that. So it's just trying to like, I'll try to like just be creative to fill the gaps. And I'm not really doing like, oh, well, yeah, well, what would, you know, this punk band be doing in this spot? You know, like, right. would the drums play this? It's like, I don't think about that sort of a thing ever. It's just kind of like, what do I think sounds cool and makes the song interesting and fits that song, you know? And then it just kind of all that together just turns out to, you know, what we are. So I don't think we ever had really any sort of defined genre we were ever trying to fit in. It was just kind of going out there and making music. And I also think that's kind of where we would get, you know, certain backlash from scene people here too, where it's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, you don't fit into this hardcore scene. You don't fit into a thrash scene. You know, we're not really like an underground punk, you know, we're not like ripping our jeans and sewing them back with dental floss and shit like that, you know? So it's like, we don't fit in any of those things, which is why you're just kind of like on the outside looking in, I guess, you know, from like a scene right, standpoint. So
that's the perfect segue here, because now what kind of shows are you playing, right? I'm not a fan of ska, but I seem to have a lot of ska bands on the show who have to then defend themselves when I tell them I don't like them. But the idea there with ska is if you play one ska song, you're a ska band and you can play on ska bills. Or if you have horns, you're a ska band, right? But so when you think about the bills that you're on, do you have to think about the other bands and how you fit?
I think we think about the other bands that are there. We end up playing with like just a lot of friends that we have. So we have some bands, some friends that are like in like kind of similar to us, like more rock, like our friends Gluttons, or we think about there's bands that are more like more punk. And I think we fit with both. We've played shows with death metal bands. We played shows with like kind of 80s style metal bands, but are newer. I don't think we've ever played with anybody that's ska.
Yeah, but there's definitely times where, yeah, we've played shows where it's like, ooh, like it's weird. There's like a ton of skinheads here, or you know. But then there's also been like, you know, we opened up for the Suicide Machines before, and that was like a pretty great fit.
I mean, they're a ska band, I would
say. I was going to say, we've never played with ska band other than Suicide Machines. Right.
No, well, they don't have horns, at least.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, so you mentioned you have a new record out, which I want to talk about. Mors Certa Vita Incerta. Did I say that right? My Latin is rusty. Okay. So
we think that's right, although I've had somebody tell me that I'm continued to mispronounce it, that it's okay. Mors Certa Vita Incerta, but
okay.
We right. say Mors Certa Vita Incerta. We're from Ohio. We don't know any better.
Exactly. Death is certain, life is uncertain, right?
That's right.
And so is that the message of the album? Where did that come from?
So it's a piece from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, the novel that went into Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And the chicken head who works at the robotic pet store, his boss says that. And I, you know, we had like the songs for the record for the longest time. And I was reading that and it jumped out. I'm like, that's the name of an album. And and like, it's taken us a while to kind of put the album together. So like, I'm always freaking out. Like, is somebody else take it? Somebody else take it? I know there's somebody's got like, Death is Certain, The Hour is Unknown. Like there's that as an album title, the translation. Yeah. And then, you know, kind of, we had a lot of the songs and then Doug and I were talking and Doug kind of had a skeleton for another song. And it just, that fits so perfectly in the song. There's like a breakdown. It's real staccato and it's a chanting part. It fits so well. I was like, yeah, I think that song fits in the album. And I think that's the title song for the album. And it worked out just really well.
Cool. So then why so long between releases? Your first album called Set to Go, like 2004, I think. Although looking on Bandcamp, there was also a 2010 date. So I was confused a little bit at the dates, but in any event, a long time between that album and this album. And is there a particular reason, or is the answer life?
Answer's life. It just, I think there's been different concepts too, that, you know, that this was more like, let's go do it in a studio. And I don't think that even fit. The first studio experience for us was like, you know how it is. You're super rushed. You got to go. And I think we all left there thinking, boy, I wish there was sense. I did the vocals in like a couple hours. And it was tough because the first album we did, we went to the studio and there was another band there that wasn't supposed to be there. So they canceled our recording time. A bigger band was there and said, sorry, guys, you guys can't record. So we recorded at Doug's house, and Doug and I just did the vocals, and we got into such a good groove. I was so comfortable. And then then the studio called us back and said, okay, that the other band's done. We got a hole in our schedule. Why don't you guys come in? We'll give you a week, record the album. And there it was a learning experience. It just rush. And the vocals, we did them so fast that I was never like super happy with them. So I was happy when we could come back and, you know, and do this record at Doug's place and just take our time with it.
Did you listen to the first record as you prepared to record, to get an idea of perhaps what you didn't want to do or things that you really liked about the recording?
I actually don't think that anybody in the band really likes the recording of the first album at all. I don't think the sound sounds like us. And it was just such kind of like Matt said, a rushed kind of negative experience. I mean, there were times where the engineer just would wander off and it was like me at the board, you know, like actually recording us and doing stuff and kind of being the producer. And it was like, okay, well, we're basically just paying this guy to like use his equipment. So, you know, all these years later, you know, I have my own, you know, studio set up. And so when it came to the album, it was like, okay, well, I'm going to be the engineer. I'm mixing it. I'm like, you know, I'm recording everything and I know how we sound. I know what I want my drums to sound like. I know what our guitar should sound like. I know what Matt wants in his vocals. And so I think this album, like finally, like sounds exactly like us. You know, we really wanted a very live feel, but to really, like when you hear it, it's like, oh yeah, that's what we sound like, you know, and not just some sort of like go into a studio and have somebody else tell you what your sound should be.
Right. So how often did you go out into the performance area and say like, Matt, sorry, that sucked, or this guitar solo is bad, you need to redo everything? You know, were you that sort of producer?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it was not like a heavy hand, you know, it's not like, you know, like the Def Leppard where they're like in there for like, you know, 3 days getting like, you know, the intro on one song and the guy's just yelling at him the whole time. But you know, I would never hesitate. Like if we're like right in the middle of the track and I heard somebody playing something, I'm like, nope. Like here, let's do that again. You know?
Yeah.
Or if someone did something, I'm like, I think you could get that better. You know? So it was just something like that, you know, cause we all have a really good rapport. So we don't have to be, you know, I don't have to be, you know, callous or, you know, mean to anybody to get what I think we want. But we also were fine with experimenting too. Cause again, we're not having to pay anybody, right. Not having to pay an engineer. So we could really take the time, which is why the process started right at the onset of COVID. And then we started tracking on and off here, like over the course of like 2 years, right. Just had the time to really spend as much as we wanted and get it dialed in.
How did you walk the line between, okay, this is good enough, or I want it to be better, or this represents the band as it is now, and I want to make sure that we have the best sounding thing, whatever best is, right? I want to make sure that the best thing is what's representing us to the public. You know, how do you walk that line between really what's good enough versus we could get this 3% better?
I think it's realizing what you are too. You know, we're not Taylor Swift, or you know, like we're not looking for that like 100% polished perfection that you would hear in like a Linkin Park album or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just like there's zero flaws. You know, because we are playing like in rock music, it's something that was kind of like it's more of a feel than like, you know, the technical precision where you're like, well, you need to be like completely on here and this was dragging a little bit or this was rushed, you know, as long as it sounded and feel and felt good, you know, like that we could work with it. It was the same with Matt's perform, like vocal performances too. It was like, I just want the sound great. Like if you rush it for a second, you know, like that, that's okay. Like we can work with things, you know, but like, it's just that feel, like when you hear it, you know, you have it. You know, and if it's not perfect, that's okay.
I think a lot of what we had to do on the vocal side.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Matt. Yeah.
I think on the vocal side of things, Doug just had to really watch because, you know, there was just, he just always had a good ear on my voice. Like it's starting to break down a little bit. You're starting to lose it a little bit. So we took our time with it. And I think we were doing like two songs. We would record for like two and a half hours and do a couple songs. I know, Doug, you were trying to edit it as we went too, to kind of move things around. But the concept is, once we discussed it, that this is going to be a studio album, but we're kind of do the vocals with more of a live feed. And as dumb as it was, I held the microphone. So a lot of times you're the vocalist and you're like in, you know, what we're doing and the style of music that we have, like on stage holding that microphone with like a tight grip. And then you go to the studio and there's the windscreen and you have to stand there and project. It's really foreign to do that. So that was one of the first things, like, hey, if we try this and you hold the mic, is it going to work? And when it worked, it just made me so much more comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
I have a technical question there. So then did Matt just record with a 58 or did you have a condenser or something?
Yeah, it was just a I have the mic right here. Yeah, just a standard, like just nothing special. He held it in his hand. And kind of like it was an experiment, but I kind of figured it would work because I remember, I can't remember exactly the Lamb of God album, but I remember watching all their studio footage from Lamb of God doing one of their studio albums. And, you know, Randy Blythe just like, he held like the same thing. He recorded everything off of 58 screaming in the studio room, and you know, he wasn't in a booth or anything, so we did the same thing here. He held that, and I actually took a another condenser mic and put it in the room and just had it hot. So because instead of putting artificial reverb on the vocals, I wanted the actual sound of the room, so it just added to the whole live feel of it.
That's cool. And again, being able to take the time and having your own resources and do that, I think is really important for bands. It's not easy to do though, right? I would say it's a luxury to have someone in the band that's capable of recording. Lots of bands make their own recordings, but mostly it sounds like shit, right? So there's a real difference between just someone saying that they can record and someone actually being able to record.
Yeah. I mean, and I have like a completely modest setup, but it was being able to, you know, just be delicate with it and literally take as much time as I wanted to get my drums perfect, you know, spend, you know, like 3 weeks, you know, like when our schedule is allowed for Matt to do his vocals, same thing with the guitars. It's like, when everything worked out, and then we would work on it until we got what we wanted out of that, instead of, you know, so there was no rush. I mean, I think, I don't know, I have somewhere around maybe like 400 to 500 hours I put in the album, you know, just editing and, you know, like recording and just mixing. And then I had, my brother is actually, he works in the film industry, but he's done music his whole life with me as well. And he's done a bunch of different stuff. He's done like film scores and he's won an Emmy. So we had him actually do the mastering process too. So the whole thing has really not cost us anything because we've just been able to do everything in house. Like same thing with the video, the new video that just dropped, like my brother shot the whole thing and edited it. So it's like, it was free.
Are you going to take a bigger piece of the publishing, Doug, because of all the hours that you put in? So when it breaks big, you get a bigger piece of the publishing pie?
No, you know, even if anybody didn't write a song, it didn't matter. We all get 20%. There's five of us, 20%. Cause it just, again, it's not about the money.
you know, 5 years from now, it's going to be re-released as like more sort of Vita inserted Doug's version.
Right. What's so special about this? Oh no, all the royalties go to him. my payment was that I didn't have to chip in for that pressing of vinyl. So
okay. That's great. That's fair. Just a couple of more things here in particular for Matt. Is recording in the studio, is that inherently more intimidating for a vocalist, capturing a moment in time versus feeling free on stage?
I think so. I think like on stage, we're like from the live setting, like I'm pretty energetic and all over the place. So by being that way, you have certain liberties with like, hey, I missed the line. I messed up a line, and it doesn't really matter. Where in the studio, it has to be more exact. Right. We inserted like vocally, we added, you know, there's certain parts of songs that were like, hey, this chorus really should have, you know, 8 lines rather than 4. So we added certain things in. But I think generally it's a little bit more intimidating to be in the studio and like, this is the final version. I mean, the voice is the vocalist is what you hear. It's right up front. It's a little nerve wracking, but to me, to know that we were kind of trying to mimic the live recording that we had helped. And then being able to hold the microphone helped, because then it was more natural to what I was doing.
Right.
It wasn't so foreign.
Cool. Then last thing here, guys, and that is, what's next? You have a record, you're pressing vinyl. How do you get this in front of people? How do you get your expression in front of people? How do you fit into the sea of a trillion bands all making Facebook and Instagram posts, you know? So how do you stand out?
I think for us, it's some key shows. You know, we're going to do a record release show on the 25th of November. And I think from there, you know, like we had mentioned that Akron and Youngstown are different, but they're so close. So I think it's really easy to make inroads and to play some shows there. I think we're almost like every other band. You just need to see us. And once you see us, I think people are going to be into it, you know, but everybody thinks that, you know?
Yeah. Plus, I mean, again, it isn't so much like it was even, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, where you have to beat the pavement and you show trades and everything. I mean, a lot of, you know, getting ears on things does depend on how well your, you know, social media campaigns go. Even though I despise doing that sort of stuff, it's kind of necessary for the new thing. I mean, because maybe me personally too, it's like, I don't buy CDs anymore. Just like most people, you listen to your music streaming. So if everyone is getting your music on their phone to listen to it in their car or whatever, then like you need to go to where people are at, which is basically on their phones and online.
Right. Right. Cool. So the album is called Mors Certa Vita Incerta, or Mors Certa Vita Incerta. I guess we'll put them both out there. The band is called Jackknife Power Bombs. I will drop all the links into the podcast description. Thanks very much to Matt and Doug for being on the show. It's appreciated. And hopefully everyone can check out your live thing and check you out when the record comes out.
Album comes out. Album comes out November 10th.